This is Peter Francis, President of Clinical Laboratory Sales Training, and this topic is called Integrating Sales Coaching into Sales Managing. It was written in December of 2010. The research stands as indisputable. Great coaching exists as the cornerstone of creating a masterclass sales representative. People like Robert De Niro, Roger Federer, Tiger Woods, and Bill Gates, they are all superstars in their respective field, and they all have professional coaches. Irrespective if the person is a performer, an athlete, an executive, whatever profession, top people in any industry are continuously trying to improve their skills. In addition, leading companies are always looking for ways to enrich their employees' expertise and proficiencies. In the area of sales, it distills down to great coaching. We all need coaches because we simply can't see our own swing. It's human nature not to self-analyze. We need another person with a critical eye to see our strengths and to help us build on them, as well as recognize our weaknesses so we can help control or compensate for them. Why, however, do salespeople frequently get the short end of the stick when it comes to coaching? There are some sales organizations that have terrific managers who provide honest feedback. Many, however, have less attentive or experienced managers. There are several reasons for the paucity of good coaching, some more obvious than others. First, coaching can be difficult, especially when you might be dealing with a successful sales representative who feels his way equals the right way. The law of first knowledge plays a major role in most everyone's development. People are hardwired to believe whatever they learned first, regardless of later evidence against it. It takes a lot of substantiation and verification to change someone's mind, so the coach frequently has an uphill battle from the get-go. On the other hand, if the salesperson starts out in the field of sales, having an experienced coach will do wonders for the rep's development and career. Secondly, developing into a good coach takes time and effort. Most sales managers come from the field ranks, and unless they themselves had a good mentor, they might not always get training on the essential skills of becoming a good coach. The third reason resides in the fact some organizations do not support a coaching culture. In the case of a typical hospital outreach program, for example, the hospital may assign a marketing person to sell their lab's services. He or she frequently reports to the lab director or some other internal staff member who has no sales management experience. For those independent labs and hospital outreach programs with a sales manager, the revenue, client growth, and retention tend to be stronger due to the planning, oversight, and mentoring the experienced supervisor brings to the equation. Before going any further, it needs underscoring that sales training remains critical to the development of a successful program. Irrespective if the marketing person has had previous sales experience, even selling lab services, there should be an ongoing training schedule. It could take the form of various topics: new test introduction, new transport device, revised methodology, IT connectivity, compliance, and so forth. Consistent review of sales techniques, that is, handling objections, closing, probing, etc., helps to embed fundamental sales principles, even if it consists of a quick 30-minute review. However good the classroom and role-playing activity, most of its effectiveness will be lost unless follow-up coaching in the field occurs. Coaching stands as the only way to keep a new skill reinforced and encouraged during the learning stage. Eliminate coaching, and very few salespeople will maintain a newly taught skill. Managers feel poor performers are the ones to whom they should give the most attention. However, it has been shown the greatest return on investment equates to coaching those who have the potential to be superstars, in other words, those that are self-motivated, as well as those who are star performers. For those sales reps who have an underperforming territory, who find the job hard to do and have a difficult time digesting the lab lingo and the clinical aspects, it may simply be the wrong job for them. Spending time with these individuals persists as a time waster. The insightful coach will want to spend their time with those who are self-motivated and desire to learn the business, and also direct their attention where they have the most potential to impact the bottom line. The best organizations have managers that do five fundamental things to make their salespeople the best they can be. They are: review the distinction between strategy and tactics and teach the intricacies of each of them. Secondly, explain the difference between transactional and consultative business. Third, focus on the early stages of the sales pipeline. Four, build a coaching culture. And five, reward high performers. Separating strategy and tactics in a sales job remains essential, but asking sales reps to define these two concepts becomes an interesting exercise. Many do not know the disparity because their manager hasn't explained it. The world-class sales organizations teach the difference and consistently hone their representatives' skills in each area. Strategy pertains to the long-term position the rep wants to achieve. You could label it as the pre-planning that occurs prior to making a presentation. Unfortunately, this acts as the most neglected element in selling. Depending on the number of people involved within a prospect and the amount of information collected from each call, a representative should be able to formulate a good strategy after a couple of quality visits. Tactics, on the other hand, refer to the methods used in a face-to-face engagement, the investigating stage, the presentation stage, and finally, obtaining commitment. Of course, there exist significant subplots to these overarching categories, all of which requiring a great deal of review and practice. Separating transactional business from consultative business. Transactional business exists as a simple, small-dollar value sale that requires one interaction. If you can get a decision immediately, then it's important to use the temporary effect of a product pitch to increase customer enthusiasm and thus make the sale. The opposite, of course, relates to the multi-call sale. Many important internal discussions may occur when the seller is absent. This translates into a complex sale due to the number of people that provide input before making a decision. Selling lab services corresponds to a complex sale because of this very reason. The sales rep must make numerous visits to different people in order to build credibility and value. In fact, the creation of perceived value sits as the single most important selling skill in larger sales. Consequently, large, complex sales require consultative selling in which the rep asks many questions to a variety of people. Large sales, such as choosing a lab service, involve bigger decisions from the customer, and this changes the psychology of the sale altogether from the transactional interaction previously discussed. The prospective client rarely switches immediately to another lab unless there are egregious service issues that galvanize the client to make an abrupt decision. In other scenarios, high-performing reps lead the customer down the path through adroit questioning to realize there are enough meaningful differences between the incumbent and the proposing lab, creating a willingness to switch or at least do a trial. Given this background between transactional, which is simple, and consultative sales, which is more complex, it remains imperative for the manager and the coach to teach his or her representatives how to build value. In order to create value, a representative must learn if the prospect wants to even buy value. Some customers select a lab vendor based on political or emotional reasons and ignore any logical rationale. In those cases, the prospect may not want to buy value, or they may not be allowed to consider value over politics. Someone or an institution directs them, or there exists a feeling of responsibility and the duty to utilize a certain laboratory. A salesperson builds value through proper consultative sales methods. It also boils down to the understanding the lab's internal testing capabilities and methodologies, its basic differences against the competition, its connectivity options, and so forth. The top managers ask this question of their salespeople: what are you doing in sales calls and in your sales strategy that makes our lab difficult to substitute or make us strategically important? These top-notch coaches understand where their lab creates value through basic differences, and they concentrate there. Focusing on the early stages of the sales pipeline. Sales representatives have to understand the different phases a prospect goes through in making a decision. Their recognition of needs, evaluation of options, there's the selection stage, and implementation. The seller should recognize where he or she enters into the cycle. Ideally, the marketing person sits at the forefront of the recognition of need stage, where he or she creates specific requirements the client feels are important but cannot get, or not as well, through their current vendor. The adroit salesperson can begin to create value early on, thus explaining why it stands as so important to get in on the incipient stages of the decision-making process. It remains much more difficult to become the winner, if not impossible, if a sales rep finds himself in a position where he uncovers the client's readiness to make a final decision about switching lab vendors. He places himself in the direction of selling a me-too lab service instead of being a consultative seller throughout the decision-making process. It frequently turns into a reactive sales strategy. Yes, we can do that, and yes, we can do that too. The reasons for this difficult situation can be one or more of three things. The rep hasn't been in contact with the right people on a regular basis, or the rep has previously failed to build enough value to even be considered. And thirdly, there has been a replacement in representatives, allowing the new rep to suddenly walk in on the circumstance. Indeed, the excellent manager stresses the importance of creating value for the client at the beginning of the rep-client alliance, eventually leading to the recognition of needs stage. Building a coaching culture. Ask a sales manager, what would your sales team performance graph look like? Most would retort with, it looks like a bell-shaped curve because I've got a couple of very good ones, a bunch of average ones, and then some who are underperformers. The next question becomes, what's your sales manager's job description? Frequently, the answer comes back, well, it's to ensure my reps maintain our business and increase the sales numbers. The next question is, well, what job description does the salesperson have? Again, the response is to maintain the business and increase the sales numbers. Huh? That's interesting. In essence, it sounds like the manager has the same job as the salesperson. In a highly effective sales organization, the manager's job equates to coaching and helping to improve the performance of the people who work for him or her. After all, it's common knowledge the most important asset of a company equates to the right employees in the right position. It makes sense that developing employees is a capital investment. Successful companies recognize this simple fact and devote their time and resources in cultivating traditions that promote training and coaching. Creating a coaching culture means allocating time and attention. It means thinking through three questions. Whom do we coach? When do we coach? And what do we coach? The bottom line is the fact that the manager's job exists as the one to coach people on a consistent basis to achieve the numbers. If the manager remains incapable of providing honest and objective feedback, the organization will remain average at best. Rewarding high performers. An interesting inquiry for salespeople becomes, what holds you back from gaining more business and being at the top of the sales leaderboard? Some field people, in fact, many average salespeople, will say the competition has more to offer because of this, that, or the other thing. They blame the competitor's strengths for their failure. In the world of competitive laboratories within a no-draw environment, a lab must operate adequate and convenient patient access points. If a lab has minimal or no drawing facilities compared to the competition, there certainly may be just cause for a lack of business growth. Having said that, healthcare providers collect specimens in-house that could be potential new business, like PAPs and cultures, urines, biopsies. Insurance contracts also play a role in decision-making of a primary laboratory service. There are many doctors' practices across the country, however, that prefer the services of a lab that may not have large insurance contracts. The high-performing representatives consistently sell value and aim to mitigate the objection of insurance contracts. Contrary to the average sales milieu, highly successful representatives will typically state they want more freedom to do their job, possibly complaining it's more difficult to do business inside the company than on the outside. It comes down to allowing them to say, "I'm the sales leader, so give me additional learning opportunities and educate the internal staff about the market conditions and what I'm trying to accomplish." Top performers want to be known as such. It remains vital to celebrate this fact on a regular basis and in front of their peers. Companies can do a number of things to reward. There's money, there's name on a plaque, dinner in a fine restaurant, immediate written feedback, and so forth. Great coaches give rewards and feedback early and often. In conclusion, top-grade coaches know how to coach, what to coach, when, and whom to coach. They teach their reps the fundamentals about strategy and tactics. They know how to create value by training the consultative selling process. They know the importance of having their marketing people focus on the early stages of decision-making. They consistently work towards building a coaching culture, and they ruthlessly reward top performers. For those labs that do not have coaching expertise on site, having an industry-experienced individual for ad hoc visits and field days can be a worthwhile investment. This is Peter Francis, President of Clinical Laboratory Sales Training. I hope you have enjoyed this article on integrating sales coaching into sales managing.